This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN Studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi here on this Saturday morning. Hope everyone is doing well. Michael, how are you doing, man? This Saturday a.m.
I am good. Yeah, I'm doing good, Femi. I mean, it's Saturday a.m. We've got New England, Chicago. We've got Baltimore, New Washington. A lot of people watching today. It's always good. Great weekend. We got NBA basketball. We got your Golden Knights starting today there in Las Vegas. So it's a great time.
Yeah, I think they're more Stormy's Golden Knights than my Golden Knights here. But I mean, I'm rooting
for Stormy. Oh, that's right. You're a Seattle guy, but that's okay. Well, I'm rooting for Stormy. So yes.
Yeah. You know, the Kraken, they couldn't quite get there. You know, they good playoff run. You know, first time in franchise history. The history, of course, only being two seasons. But
are you a Mariners fan too?
I root for the team to do well. I'm not super big into baseball, so I wouldn't call myself a fan because I'm not living and dying with the results of the game, but I root for them to do well. Last year was really exciting. I mean, they hadn't been to the playoffs since when I was in middle school, so it was fun to kind of see them get a little October baseball.
I asked because I'm friends with the player development. We had him on the Daily Coach this morning in an interview, Andy McKay, and they have three first-round picks, so this is a great time for the Mariners to really kind of reinvent their franchise. If you hit with those three first-round picks, you know, who knows what the end result could be.
Yeah, they've been hitting with some of these picks. Like, the farm system has been really healthy. Julio Rodriguez last year, American League Rookie of the Year. Jared Kelnick now starting to be the player that they thought he would be when they traded for him in the Robinson Cano deal. So the Mariners got they have a bright future ahead. But I think folks in Seattle are a little panicked as they're playing 500 baseball here in May. I think they thought they were going to win 120 games before the season started. But I digress. You mentioned the Seattle fandom. This is a fun day for somebody who did grow up in Seattle because one of the guests that we have on the program actually led the Seattle Supersonics to the NBA Finals way back in the 1990s.
What a great nickname.
Hell
great
of a nickname.
Great uniforms, great nickname.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I loved it.
No, the Sonics was a fantastic time in my lifestyle. The one and only George Karl will be joining us at 11:15 Eastern time, 8:15 West Coast time. Obviously, a former NBA head coach. Coached the Denver Nuggets as well, but is a basketball Hall of Famer, North Carolina guy. That's a long lineage of coaches who have come from North Carolina. Jonathan Von Tobel, though, will be joining us before George Karl. That's in 45 minutes from now. VSiN's senior NBA analyst and host of the Hardwood Handicappers podcast. And then our buddy Thomas Gable at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 West Coast time. The Race and Sportsbook Director over at the Borgata here. But, Michael, before we get into all the NBA stuff, we'll get into some NHLs as well with our buddy TG. Let's talk some football. And I know our audience in Nesson is wondering, because we all heard that when the schedule came out, week one, Eagles-Patriots, it's going to be Tom Brady Day. But people insist that Brady's going to come back and come out of retirement. I don't know who they're talking to. Maybe Tom is hinting at stuff, and I'm not picking up on it and the way he discusses it. But he's done, isn't he?
Oh, I think so. But, you know, it's funny, though, Femi, it will not end. It's one of these stories that won't end. And partly because last year when it ended and then it went 30 days and it didn't end and he came back to play one more season. But, you know, everybody wants to kind of tie it together. I had a phone call this week from a friend and said, here's what I've heard. Do you know anything about this? And that Tom Brady was throwing balls to Davante Adams and Brady was in full uniform. Well, you know, I said, well, Brady working out's probably not a rumor. I would suspect Brady's going to work out every day. Whether he throws footballs or not, I don't know. But I'm sure he's going to have time for a workout. Wearing a full uniform to throw footballs, that doesn't sound realistic to me. So there's something wrong here. But I think at the end of the day, nobody understands the situation that Tom is facing. And as I said, when he announced his retirement, you know, age didn't get him. He still threw the ball well. His eye level was still up the field, you know, and injury didn't get him, which typically happens. Dan Marino tears his Achilles. He walks off the field. That's the end of his career. You know, that didn't happen. We saw that with a lot of other players. But what got him was his family. Mm-hmm. You know, he needs to be a parent. He needs to be a single parent. He needs to have his children for 2 weeks in Miami. And he can't leave that. That's why he's not entering into the Fox TV booth this year, because I think he wants to get his life in order. And I'm not speaking for him, but I'm speaking in terms of what I know from talking to people. So I've never bought it. I think a lot of it, it's for clicks, because you know this and I know this. If you read anything, if it has a certain name in it, the algorithms go way up and you get in front of the Google, you get in front of YouTube, you get in front of all that stuff, and that helps.
Yeah, that search engine optimization that everyone's always talking about there. Just throw Brady in there. It might not even be about Tom Brady, but we're just going to put Brady in there and see what happens and get this thing boosted up.
Yeah, we
could
put my college roommate's Paul Brady from Waltham. We should put him in there. He'll set off the Google alerts.
Yeah. Well, here's Tom Brady in his own words on what the future holds and if he will ever play football once again.
I'm certain I'm not playing again. So I've tried to make that clear, and I hate to continue to profess that because I've already told people that. Lots of times, but I'm looking forward to my broadcasting job at Fox next year. I'm looking forward to the opportunity ahead with the Raiders, and we're in the process of that, along with the other different things that I'm a part of professionally and in my personal life, just spending as much time with my kids as I can and seeing them grow up and support the different things that they have going on. And that's a very important job, and I take them all pretty seriously. And I want to do the best job I possibly can, just like I tried to do in football for all those years. It's just going to be a little bit of a redirection to full time with not playing, but more full time with family and other professional opportunities and responsibilities, which are all really exciting.
You know what, Michael, I want to take this back to something that you said more than a year ago when Brady initially retired after the 2021 season. And I know you came on VEASAN and you said, hey, like, for Tom to, at his age, to be ready to play, he's got to climb that mountain early in the offseason. He's got to go up and start preparing in late February to get his body ready for the rigors of an NFL season. Isn't that a little late in the game? Like, everyone keeps talking about a return, and I know he's probably working out, but he's not really, like, probably ramping up to, like, football workout. Like, he would have come back by now if he wanted to come back.
I think that's the most salient point of this whole conversation, Femi, is the fact that his actions are not one of a player that's thinking about or contemplating coming back, because Brady is a scaler of a mountain, but he always starts at the base camp. And to get to the top of the mountain, it's a long climb. And Brady understands the process better than anybody. You don't win 7 Super Bowls. You don't play as long as he did without falling in love with the process. You know, he wasn't a cough twice, don't stretch, let's go play guy. You know, those guys don't last very long. Those guys have great careers, but they don't have long careers. Brady's length of career is due to the fact that he starts at base camp and climbs a mountain every year. And it's a new mountain. And so that he's not doing that is further proof that he's not coming back, and that people keep trying to make a story out of it. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo has a waiver in his contract, and it's, oh my gosh. And so let's get some clicks on this, because Jimmy Garoppolo is probably not going to pass his physical and they'll sign Brady. Well, first of all, let's put things in perspective. Garoppolo's physical was back in March. The Raiders have known about his injury since that physical. They fully expect him to be healthy. They're anticipating him being healthy. What they did in March was to make sure he was healthy to be able to play 17 games, which is critical for the Raiders season. So, you know, what happens is there's causation and correlation. And everybody wants to think that the cause of Garoppolo is correlates to Brady. Doesn't work.
Yeah, and people are making that link because Tom Brady is now part of the minority owner group of the Las Vegas Raiders, working with the owner Mark Davis there. And Josh McDaniels gets peppered with questions, not about Brady, but about Garoppolo. And I think it's hard to talk about Brady without talking about the Garoppolo side of this thing, like you mentioned with the ankle, or sorry, not the ankle, but the foot injury that he had, that second metatarsal that they're hoping that can heal up after the second surgery. And Josh McDaniels was asked earlier this week by the Las Vegas Raiders media about, hey, how are you feeling with this uncertainty at your quarterback? And here's what he had to say.
I have no anxiety.
Right. Okay. There you go.
You guys might have anxiety. I don't have any anxiety.
Is there a confidence level then that he'll be there in training camp and ready to go?
Yep. I'm not going to put a timeline or a day on anything, but like I said, I have no anxiety. Feel pretty good about it.
Buddy Josh, no anxiety. Now, I'm sure people will still twist what he says with the no timeline. Yeah. They'll say, whoa, he's not putting a timeline on it. But he sounds like he's pretty relaxed.
I think they've been relaxed. I think, you know, the fact that this story got out and it got clicks is made the Raider Kingdom fandom, nervous. But this has been in the plans, and nobody's privy to the information. Nobody's seen the x-rays of Garoppolo. Nobody knows, you know, how he's, you know, he's been in a boot, how that comes out, and how he's going to play. But this we do know. He's been in the facility every day since he signed the contract, albeit when he had to get the screw put in his foot. So he's been engaged in the team, and he's been engaged in the learning, and he's been engaged in the understanding of the offense. So, and they've been engaged with him. I think if they had any doubts about Garoppolo playing, they would have signed another quarterback. They would have done something else. You know, they brought Brian Hoyer in, who they know is just a stopgap. They drafted O'Connell from Purdue. You know, how quickly can they get him ready? I can understand where Josh is coming from. They don't have any anxiety over this injury. What you could have anxiety over is Garoppolo's inability to stay healthy. That's got to concern you. As a Jimmy Garoppolo fan, I'm concerned. I want to see Jimmy play 17 games. I want to watch him play because I think he's a good player. I think he gets much maligned because he gets blamed for everything, even though he wins a lot of games.
Yeah, no, we all want to see Jimmy Garoppolo stay healthy, because if he's healthy, that means the Raiders can play at their best, and I think that's best for the league when the Raiders are always competitive and kind of in the mix of things here. But it's going to be a storyline because, like you mentioned, whether it's the second metatarsal in the foot or if it's the shoulder or the ankle or the knee, yeah. Jimmy Garoppolo, unfortunately, has not been able to stay healthy. I believe only one time he made it through an entire season, that back in 2019 when he led the 49ers to the Super Bowl. How about that? All right, we're going to continue to talk some NFL. Michael Lombardi's going to give you his five best NFL offseasons next here on the Lombardi Line.
With former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a smarter sports bettor with a VSiN Pro subscription. For a limited time, sign up for just $9.99 and get full access to everything we do, including daily pro picks on all the summer action like the NFL and college football futures, premium analysis from our team of top handicappers and industry experts, 24/7 video access, and pro tools like our exclusive betting split showing you where the public and sharp money is going to give you an edge. Don't miss out on our lowest intro price of the year. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. Sounds like a great deal. People should take advantage of that.
Yep.
Especially now that we are in the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Finals. We got the golf coming up later on in a couple of weeks. U.S. Open out in Los Angeles. A lot going on.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on. And I think, you know, you got to get ready for the NFL season. And we're gonna release our pro betting guide for the NFL much sooner this year than we did in the past, because it gives you a chance to kind of fully engage into the NFL, which is ever-changing and ever-evolving. So sign up early. You'll get that. I think at the end of July, we're going to make sure that's in everybody's hands and not give it to people at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be a really, really good thing for folks to do, to study up on, and during those dog days of July, college. You can get your guide reading done in July. Then August, once it comes up, get those bets in, and then we're ready to go for the fall. Did you see Adam Burke sent the email
out? Right to that Justin Fields window with your MVP ticket. People will be following you along, you know? Because, I mean, you know, his QBR in the second half of the season, all day yesterday I was walking around thinking the QBR in the second half of the season was your defense. I loved it.
He got better. That's what the numbers say.
Yes.
You know, just, men lie, women lie, numbers don't lie, buddy.
right. QBR. I'm going to send you some really good QBRs from games that players didn't win.
Hey, you know what? Tom Brady has a high QBR. He's pretty good, so QBR likes him.
Yeah, he's got 7 Super Bowls, too. Yeah. He can complete a pass over 10 yards, too. Fields can't. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, let's digress. We have plenty of time this offseason, and the games will be played in the fall, and we'll see who's right and who's wrong. But let's talk about right now, because we're through the second phase of the OTAs. Phase 3 is coming up next week, and the week after that is minicamp, and everybody breaks for like a 4 or 5 week break for the summer, then they get back right at it for training camp. But now that we're through phase 2 of the OTAs, we wanted to break down the best and the worst offseason so far, the 5 best and the 5 worst. And these are according to Michael Lombardi, our former front office executive in the National Football League. So, Michael, We'll start with the best ones because we like to do the dessert before we get to the veggies. But let me say this before we start.
I participated in this with a sense of reluctance. Elliot, our producer, wanted this.
It's twisting your arm?
I really think. Yeah, he twisted my arm. He gives me assignments out. It's a wonderful thing. I'm back at Hofstra again. Anyway, so my point here is this is really not a fair analysis of the teams, because what's never put into the equation when people are grading off seasons is where their team was, the players from the 2022 draft who must make an impact on the team. For example, you know, everybody can love Atlanta's offseason. They've added, you know, all these defensive players, Jesse Bates, you know, Omolata, the defensive tackle, all those guys, right? But if Desmond Ridder doesn't play well, is it really going to work out? I mean, he's more critical of 2022 draft. And I think that's part of this is really important. Drake London has to take a huge mother may I step forward. And I think when you're evaluating the off seasons, there's some that stand out, like the New York Football Jets. I mean, look, they added a blue chip quarterback who didn't play like a blue chip one last year, but is capable of doing it this year. Mm-hmm. That really is going to give you a good off season. Right, that gives you a chance to have one. The 49ers added Tony Hargrave to a defensive front that's really good. They've got a great the best kicker in the college draft to replace Robbie Gould, you know, and they feel like that their quarterback Bryce Purdy will start throwing the ball, so you like them. Carolina, you like Bryce Young, gives them a good quarterback. I think Seattle's been adding a lot of nice pieces, but Seattle needs, you know, their Abraham, and they need Chris Cross, the two tackles to keep taking steps forward. They had a great draft last year, and that draft class, if it takes another step forward, can be really dynamic. Same thing with Philadelphia. Jordan, you know, everybody talks about their draft this year, but Dean and Davis, Jordan Davis, the kid they drafted first round last year, and Dean they drafted in the third round. Those are as critical players as anybody. So to me, it's really trying to tie the 2022 draft to what they've accomplished this offseason.
Well, you started with the New York Jets, and excuse me, clearly the New York Jets accomplished what many teams hope to accomplish if they don't have starting quarterbacks who are of that franchise caliber player, and that's getting one in Aaron Rodgers there. The Jets are really excited. The fan base is excited. The win total is set at 9.5. Like, there's high expectations for the New York Jets. Were there other moves that they made in addition to Rodgers that really stood out to you?
Well, look, you know, I think I liked Elijah Moore, and they traded Elijah Moore because he was unhappy with the situation. Lazard gives them a chance too. You know, they draft Tippin in the draft at center. Could he become the starting center for him? I think that's going to be critical. They get Becton back. Now they're moving him to right tackle. He wants to be the left tackle. They're going to play Dwayne Brown at left tackle at 39 years old. And so that's got to be a concern. And so I think, to me, when you look at the Jets, and if they get Hall back healthy, if Becton's back healthy, you know, adding Lazard, and Mecole Hardman, and then all of a sudden, if Garrett Wilson takes that huge step forward, you know, they've got a nice thing going. But let's be clear here. The Jets have only been to the playoffs 13 times since they won the Super Bowl in 1968. Mm-hmm. They haven't been to the Super Bowl. They haven't been to the playoffs since 2010. This is not an organization whose bloodlines are built for championships, right? They're not. And so that's going to take some time. But in terms of their offseason, yeah, you got to think they did. I mean, they brought Carl Lawson back. You know, they've been able to add some pieces to their team, which won 7 games last year. I think the coach is as important to improve in the offseason as any of the players as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's one team that's on your list right now, or rather one team that's not on the list that I thought might have made the list. And maybe when I do this exercise later on this weekend, it'll make my list. And that's the Miami Dolphins. And I thought the addition of getting Vic Fangio as a defensive coordinator, that's a big coup for Mike McDaniel and that coaching staff. And also getting Jalen Ramsey, who I know didn't have the best of years in 2022. People are kind of down on Ramsey. Oh, he only went for a third-round pick, and he was getting burned out there. But Ramsey's kind of one of those guys that he kind of goes with the flow. Like, if things are going well, he's going to play at an elite level. If things are going poorly, you're not going to get the best from Jalen Ramsey. I thought that now he's in a different situation in Florida. He's kind of closer to home there. I think this Dolphins team really took a step this offseason.
I love David Long, the linebacker that they signed from Tennessee. Yeah. He can stay healthy. He's undersized, but he's fast, and he's really explosive. And I think he certainly will help their defense. But, you know, and then Bradley Chubb has a full year under his belt there. Can he stay healthy? Can he be the pass rusher they need? To me, I don't disagree. Miami could have easily been on the list. You know, I think the Fangio hire is probably the most significant. But to me, Miami's issues are in their offensive line. You know, Armstead's a good player when he stays healthy. He's over 30 now. Can he stay healthy? He hasn't been able to do that pretty much most of his career. You know, Austin Jackson is the right tackle. They brought in Isaiah Wynn, who did not play well at all for New England last year. Their offensive line is not to the level they need it to be, especially considering that Tua has to be protected. And Tua's injuries, concussion, if he's one more concussion, you're looking at Mike White as the starting quarterback for this team. Are they good enough around Mike White to offset that? I don't think so. And then I think Mike McDaniel, who's truly in the subcontractor role as a head coach, he doesn't care what they do on defense or what they do in the kicking game. He's solely focused on the offense. And I don't know if you can really improve if you're just going to be that way as a head coach.
Yeah, Fangio has almost brought him to just to be the defensive head coach.
He's the head coach of the defense.
Yeah.
He is the head coach of the defense, and Danny Grossman's the head coach of the offense, of the special teams. McDaniels makes no bones about that. He, in meetings, he's very clear. You guys run your units, I'll run my unit. Now, will they run the ball? That's the key question. I mean, he was hired to run the ball. He goes into Buffalo last year with Skylar Thompson in a playoff game, and he's throwing it all over the lot. I mean, like, it made no sense. And then next week we see Cincinnati in bad weather just dominate them. You know, like, where's the strategy? How do we win the game, and how do I help my quarterback? I don't think that was the case last year.
Yeah, he was asking Skylar Thompson to do way too much in that playoff game. Another team that didn't make your list, and it made probably everyone's list, is the Baltimore Ravens. Just for bringing Lamar Jackson back, they got an A.
Well, that's not enough. They get an A for everything. I mean, they could go outside and they could cut their entire team and then sign college free agents and get an A. I mean, come on.
What a coup.
Baltimore has got – they got a great – Baltimore, really, somebody – and whoever wants to run for the Republican side of the next presidential election should hire someone from Baltimore. They have a tremendous PR machine there that is unfettered, and it's outstanding. And I tip my cap to them. I really do. I'm not saying this with any sense of jealousy. It's just that they are incredibly gifted at sending out their messaging. You know, to sign Lamar and just think that you had a great offseason, I mean, they overpaid for a receiver who's really, as we segue into it, I mean, the overpayment of Odell Beckham is the reason why Kansas City and perhaps Buffalo won't be able to get Hopkins, because he wants a contract similar to Odell Beckham.
Yeah, we'll talk Hopkins a little bit later on the show. Eric DaCosta, general manager, maybe he should be a campaign manager as well for somebody.
Tremendous. He'd be outstanding. I mean, I tip my hat.
JVT joins us next to talk NBA Finals.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit vsin.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way. VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at vsin.com. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi here. Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst and host of the Hardwood Handicappers podcast, will be joining us in the next segment. I got a little ahead of myself before we head to break last segment there, but JVT is going to join us 15 minutes from now. We're excited to talk to him. NBA Finals is going on. Denver has a 1-0 series lead on the Miami Heat, and we're going to get his thoughts on all the coaching moves that have been happening in the NBA. I'm curious of what he thinks about Nick Nurse going to the Sixers, Frank Vogel going to the Suns, Monty Williams to the Detroit Pistons. We'll get into all of that with our buddy JVT.
And Toronto's the only opening, right? Toronto is the only opening.
Yeah.
Sounds like they're close to making a decision fairly soon, too.
Yeah, we'll see what they do. Maybe they'll call Doc. I don't know, maybe.
I think Doc is involved in that job, too. Yeah.
He's involved in everything. Who reps him, man? He's got a good agent out there as well, getting his name out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But last segment, we talked about the best NFL offseason. We got the dessert out of the way. Now let's get to the veggies, Michael. Let's get to the part where we're going to humble some fans here, unfortunately. But, you know, we got to be honest about these things. The top five worst NFL offseasons, according to you, where do you want to start with this one?
Well, I think a lot of it, you know, look, again, this is all based on the criteria of how many moves have you really made. For example, the Rams and the Bucks had the worst offseason, and it had nothing to do with, really, their inability to diagnose players and craft players. It had everything to do with winning Super Bowls, right? So the Rams have no cap room. The Rams are strapped. I mean, they had to spend $10 million and flop seventh-round picks just to get Allen Robinson off their cap. So, like, this is a struggle for them. You know, they had to sign up. They have a bunch of college free agents. Les Snead fell in love with Stetson Bennett. Les Snead is their general manager. He fell in love with Stetson Bennett, wanted him pretty much over most quarterbacks, so they drafted him in the fourth round. He sees him as the future to Matthew Stafford, who they had to pay $57 million to, guaranteed, which is another investment and another further down the tunnel of getting out of cap hell, which they're not going to be able to do. The Bucs are in cap hell and will continue to be in cap hell because they have no freedom to move around. The Chargers only signed, you know, they signed Eric Kendricks as their middle linebacker and basically did nothing else. They extended Austin. They didn't extend him. They redid Eckler's contract, and then they had the draft. Jacksonville loses their left tackle, which is problematic. You know, because of Cam Robinson's suspension, and they drafted Harrison from Tennessee in the first round, but did they do enough? And then the Packers, which did very little, but they have a good team if Jordan Love comes around. So for me, a lot of it was the Packers are, this is who they are. They believe in the draft. They don't believe in free agency. You know, Jacksonville added Calvin Ridley, who doesn't count, but he does. That, to me, is a good move. The Chargers feel like they just need to get healthy. Bosa needs to get healthy. Khalil Mack needs to get healthy. You know, Rashard Slater, their left tackle, needs to get healthy. I think that's their offseason. And then the Rams and the Bucks are really in cap hell. And if you focus on the Bucks for a moment, I mean, they're going to go with Kyle Trask or Baker Mayfield as their starting quarterback. I would have a hard time taking a summer vacation knowing that.
Well, I'm not sure you can take a summer vacation after seeing the video that we're playing now for our viewing audience, and it is from a local affiliate down there in Tampa, and it's Kyle Trask and Baker Mayfield kind of going through just like the warm-up stuff and throwing to the receivers, and it's not the most accurate passes that you've ever seen. Now, I don't want to read too much into it because it's just shorts and shirts and all that stuff, but not inspiring.
It's hard to find tape on Baker Mayfield from last year. Maybe the fourth quarter against the Raiders where he made a couple throws that helped them win that game. But it's hard to find tape on Baker Mayfield that's really good. And I wonder what Tampa saw. Did they go back to the 2020 season in Cleveland where he, you know, led them to the playoffs, had a chance with 6 minutes to go in the game against Kansas City to take the lead and couldn't do it? Was that the season that they watched and feel like they could get him back? I mean, Matt Rhule's sitting in Lincoln, Nebraska today, you know, and if Baker Mayfield plays to any level of above average or even average, he's probably still the head coach in Carolina because that team was good. They just couldn't win some close games. He missed so many throws last year. It was embarrassing. I mean, it really was. So I don't have a lot of hope for Tampa Bay because, A, the quarterback, and, B, they're in such cap trouble that if they get any injuries, they're going to have a hard time replacing. It's all going to be young players. Now, they're good on defense, but are they good enough to offset a bad offense? And Brady, you know, last year protects the ball typically. If they start turning this ball over, the defense is going to be in a lot of tough spots. So I'm a little worried about the Bucs. I think they're going through what most Super Bowl teams do that push all their chips in the middle of the table, is they're going to have to pay the price.
Do you think Tampa's tanking?
I don't know if they're tanking intentionally because they do have a good roster. I think they have no choice. This is a cap hell. I mean, they have no cap room. And what makes it worse, Femi, is they have no way to get cap room. They have four players left on their roster. Devin White, if they traded, they would pick up some cap room. But they have no flexibility to create cap room. You know, Mike Evans is probably underpaid at wide receiver based on the receiver market out there. They could go to him if they felt like, but they would also deter their deter their cap in the 24 season. Mm-hmm. So they're really in a hard spot. And I think it's by going all in on winning a Super Bowl. And I'm not blaming them. Again, I'm not saying they shouldn't have. I'm just saying one of the things you have to do as an executive is every decision you make has to be for today and distantly in the future. You know, where does this put us? It's why everybody wants you to sign Hopkins. But if you give Hopkins a Beckham-type contract where it's you give him $15 million, but you prorate it out over 7 years, that the remaining of that contract is going to be on your cap for 24. That's three players you lose. Do you want to do that?
Mm. Yeah, it depends on where you're at in terms of the timeline of contending and stuff. Like I understand fully what Tampa did and what the Los Angeles Rams did. I would have done the same thing or tried to do the same thing if it led to winning a Super Bowl. Like any fan base would take that, of course, out there. So it's just kind of the credit card bill is due and you got to go ahead and pay it. But two teams I wanted to ask you about, though, I think a lot of people would be surprised to see them on the list. And those are the two teams that played in the AFC wild card that Saturday night wild game, the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Los Angeles Chargers, because these are teams that people think are ascending. Two young quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, young teams and young players around those guys. I know the Chargers, people are excited about Quentin Johnson, the wide receiver they got out of TCU. Jacksonville, everyone's kind of just expecting them to take this next step forward. Their win total set at 10. Why did these teams make your list here? Is it the coaching hires that they made or just like the lack of any real free agency moves here?
Well, as I said to start this whole conversation in the last block, it's kind of a hard – it's not a fair examination because mm-hmm. if you're a Charger fan, you know, you could say you had a bad offseason because you only signed one player, Eric Kendricks.
Yeah.
But is J.C. Jackson going to come back healthy? That's critical. Is Nick Bosa going to stay healthy? That's critical, right? So is Joey Bosa, is he going to stay healthy? Is Rashard Slater going to stay healthy? You know, those are key questions. Is Mike Williams going to stay healthy for the whole season? Mm-hmm. That those are, to me, what the Chargers are banking on. That's their offseason. Their offseason is, hey, look, we have a good roster. We added a middle linebacker that we think can help. He'll play along with Kenneth Murray inside. He'll give us a veteran leader, a signal caller for our defense. That'll help us. And we just need Khalil Mack, and we need these other players to stay healthy. And if they do, we have a good team. I don't think there's anything wrong with that logic. That's why I'm very reticent to criticize anybody's offseason because part of their planning involves the 22 team and getting them healthy.
Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator, is that a big upgrade in your eyes?
I don't see it as an upgrade. Both Kellen Moore and Lombardi, Joe Lombardi, the former coordinator, were throwing the ball quite a bit. But I think that's really because of player design, not because of overall scheme. I mean, this offensive line, when Slater went down, you know, and Corey Lindsey got hurt, they struggled to run the ball. They don't have a power back. You know, one of the criticisms that I believe in the Chargers is that they should add a power back. You know, they have Joshua Kelly and Isaiah Spiller to go along with the great Austin Eckler. But Eckler becomes a better player when he has someone else to go with. And one of the concerns I have about Kellen Moore is his inability to create a passing game around a true full-time back. He did it with Pollard, but he had Zeke in the backfield, so he treated Pollard almost like a receiver, and he was a receiver. But Eckler was down to under 7 yards per catch last year, which is too low for his talent. He needs to be near that 10 mark, which he was as a second-year player. 9. Those are the keys. When you have a running back that averages over 9 yards a catch, that's a weapon in the passing game.
Yeah, maybe this collection of teams, these five teams, you might look to play the under. Although Green Bay, I'm not going to play the under there. I think they have the upside if Jordan Love can.
No, I'm either. I would not correlate those two to the under. I wouldn't because again, if they're healthy, the Chargers, that's a different team.
Yeah, they're really talented. JVT joins us next, finally, to talk some NBA Finals.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Use the BetMGM bonus bet to place your next wager on any game in any sport. To receive your bonus bet, simply log into your BetMGM account every Saturday and Wednesday between May 13th through June 7th to bet on any game of your choice. Then Add any type of bet on any game to your bet slip and activate your bonus bet. There is no deposit or additional wager required. This bonus bet is on the house. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Promotion may differ per customer. 21 plus to wager. BetMGM.com for T's and C's. Promotional offers not available in Nevada, New York, Ontario, and Washington, D.C. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Colorado, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-522-4700 in Kansas and Nevada, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan, in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Femi Bebefe, Michael Lombardi. Lombardi out in Jersey, Femi out here in Las Vegas. And joining us right now to help us preview in all things NBA Finals, we bring in VSiN senior NBA analyst and also the host of the Hardwood Handicappers podcast, Jonathan Von Tobel, joining us here this morning. JVT, we appreciate the time this AM. Well, I want to ask it to you this way, because right now the series price, Denver minus 700, Miami plus 500. If you had no money entering this series and just are kind of parachuting in right now after game one, where would you recommend people put their money or how they kind of play this series going forward?
Nikola Jokic to an MVP at minus 400, because the Denver Nuggets are going to win the series and he's going to win the award and you can cut into that price, right? I think that's probably the most logical way to attack it. When you look at everything that the Denver Nuggets can do and you talk about all of the boxes that they can check in the series, you know, there's just a lot. They're a really, really good team. They're very well balanced. They have four shooters that can shoot above 40% at any given time. They have a decent amount of defense, or at least they're sound enough defensively that they're not going to be caught out of position many times. You know, I wrote about this in the series preview of all the NBA teams that had played multiple series in the postseason. The Denver Nuggets had given up the fewest frequency of wide open threes to any of their opponents. They're just really good at almost everything. And the thing that I like the most, and the thing that you saw come out in that first game, was they are very well coached and they're very well prepared. And I'm sure Michael can, you know, really appreciate that as being a former executive. When you look at what Michael Malone did, you look at the fourth quarter, when you're talking about the Heat cutting it down to nine, what do? Take a breath. They walk the ball up the court, and then they start doing exactly what you're supposed to do against the zone. Get Nikola Jokic in the middle, move the ball around, find guys that are cutting to the basket, and a 9-point deficit all of a sudden becomes another 16-point deficit for Miami. It looks like they're getting right back into this. They end up losing by 11. So I like everything they have to offer. So if you want to bet the series, you can, but I don't know if there's much value there, but I do think there is quite a bit of value in Jokic to win series MVP, because those are heavily, heavily correlated to one another.
JVT, if you asked anybody about the first game, game one, you know, who shot better, Miami or Denver, everybody would say, oh, Denver shot better. And yet Denver shot below 30% from the three-point line and still won by 11. So my question to you is, Boston did have a lot of open threes in the first half. They just couldn't make a shot. Do you get any confidence that they could maybe close this gap a little bit if they shot better? And assuming Denver continues to shoot poorly?
I mean, you could, Michael, but here's the thing, and I'll take you to another statistical category, which is why I think that even if Miami starts to shoot a little bit better because they shot 35%, why it's hard to close that gap. The Denver Nuggets in game one, guys, went 13 of 20 with 8 shooting fouls drawn at the rim. That's within 4 feet. This is a Miami Heat team that doesn't give up any shots within 4 feet of the basket, and the Nuggets were getting there with regularity. And the unique thing about what Denver does, Michael, is they don't do it with like a traditional north-south point guard that's beating you off the bounce. It's cuts to the basket. It's Jokic finding guys when they're cutting to the baseline, when they're doing all of those things off ball that gets them to the rim. And Jokic, you know, I've likened him to a quarterback. He throws guys open. He knows exactly where they're going, exactly where to put the ball. So to your point, Michael, like how you shoot that poorly but still win by 11 is because you're capable of doing those things. And I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon. So even if Denver continues to struggle, which I don't think is going to be the case, but I will say we have seen stranger things happen, right? A team that led the postseason in three-point shooting struggling for just like, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 games, it could happen. But I don't think that's going to be the case. When you have Michael Porter Jr., when you have Jamal Murray, when you have Nikola Jokic, when you have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, when you have all of these guys, I'll even throw Bruce Brown in there, at least when he gets a wide open look, he's capable of knocking them down. I think it's really hard to foresee them struggling. So could we enter a scenario where Miami does what they've done throughout this postseason, 47% against Milwaukee, over 50% on contested threes, the highest rate on wide open three makes that we've seen in 10 years, like they did against the Boston Celtics? I think that's a possibility, but I think it's very small in terms of the probability that it happens. And it's also why a lot of people like me have kind of been sitting there doing the Jesse Pinkman thing. Like, they can't keep getting away with this with Miami, because I don't think it's very probable they can keep shooting like this.
We're speaking with Jonathan Von Tobel, host of the Hardwood Handicappers podcast, also our VSiN senior NBA analyst. Well, it's interesting, JVT, because anytime you get a playoff series, the number one word that always comes up after game one is adjustments. Everyone talks about adjustments. What adjustments can Miami make to get back into this series and make this competitive, or is there nothing that they can do? And do you see this kind of end up being a 4 or 5 game series?
So I think there's things they can do, but there's a certain ceiling to those things that they can do. So for example, you know, one of the things we saw very early in the game in game one was something we all talked about, was a lack of size, right? When you're starting 6'5", 6'5", 6'7", and 6'9", that's going to be something that's very probable or, you know, problematic against a team that is 6'10", 6'11", and 6'10", right? Like, that's going to be a little bit of an issue. And so what do we see early on? We see Aaron Gordon, Gabe Vincent, you're defending me in transition. I'm going to put my rear end on you, and I'm going to finish. Max Strus, same thing. I'm going to finish. And we saw that consistently. So the card that the Miami Heat pulled is, okay, let's put in Cody Zeller. Zeller was atrocious. They have one more card to pull, and that would be Kevin Love. And, you know, Kevin Love is fine. He's a good shooter. He can space the floor. In his time, at his peak, he was a very good rebounder. But does he offer that same rebounding tenacity? Not entirely sure that's the case. And then there's more minutes for Haywood Highsmith, who's 6'7". But even just look at those two options for Miami, you know, Kevin Love's going to be a defensive liability. And they can try to hide him in his zone. But you saw in that game, game one, there are certain ways you could isolate defenders in his own defense. And the Denver Nuggets are going to be capable of that. So I would expect, Femi, that the adjustments are going to be Haywood Highsmith more minutes. I hate to say it because he almost won Eastern Conference Finals MVP, but we're going to start to see Caleb Martin's minutes get cut into. Mm-hmm. And you might see a little bit more Kevin Love, but there's not many things that I think the Miami Heat can pull out of their bag of tricks here when you're talking about trying to match size, because you're just not going to get taller overnight.
Yeah, that word adjustment gets tossed around, and sometimes, you know, there's no tools in your toolbox to adjust with, right? You know, yep. It's hard to overcome size, especially the length and the height of the Denver Nuggets. To me, I think that's really going to be a challenge for Spoelstra. I actually thought they would try to keep Jokic from having lead, and Femi won this assist in the first half, but I thought they would try to limit his ability to distribute the ball, force him to be the main scorer. But there was really no answer for that, because Aaron Gordon and Porter just decided they're going to take over the game, and, you know, there was no answer. So I think that's a problem. My question to you is, I think the over's got to be in play here, because I think both teams will shoot better in this game.
So I agree. I played the over 214.5. And here's the other thing, Michael. So to build on the adjustments thing as well, one thing we could see from Miami, which would help them out if we're talking about game plan adjustments, outside of just size, you could actually see them stick a little bit smaller, and this will tie into the total here in a second, and go, you know what? Denver was the second worst transition defense off of live rebounds in the regular season. And in game one, their transition rate in terms of frequency of, you know, possessions off a live rebound that started with a transition play was only 9% for Miami. That's abysmal. That's minimal. They were not running at all. But you get 2 days in between games to engage your lungs, get used to the altitude, be willing to run a little bit more. And maybe we see an adjustment in that, hey, screw getting bigger. Let's just stay small and let's run more. Let's try to get on them. And I'll take you to the Phoenix series. Phoenix, in the two games in Phoenix, they were running on nearly 40% of their live rebounds. That's crazy. And it was way farther than what Phoenix was doing in the regular season. But that's an adjustment. We got to play quicker because they struggled to defend it. And maybe we see that from Miami. So to your point, Michael, not only shooting regression to the mean for Denver, but also a quicker pace from Miami, who's going to get used to the altitude, who wants to try to exploit a weak transition defense. You could see that as well. And if all those things come together, well, now we're talking about a 4-point adjustment on the total that went to the under. I think that leads it to maybe going over. So I would agree with that assessment. On top of, you know, tying in some more adjustments, might look out for Miami to play a little bit quicker, because I think that's something we're going to see here as well.
JVT, we got about 40 seconds left. Can you talk about the interesting series prop that you're eyeing there with Michael Porter Jr.?
Yeah, just real quick. So Michael Porter Jr., you can bet all these categories. I've got Jokic to lead the series in scoring. He's got a 1-point lead after game one. But Michael Porter Jr. is tied with Bam Adebayo for most rebounds at 13 after game one. He's still 25-1 to win that. And again, if this is a short series like you believe it could be, like I could, that actually benefits Michael Porter Jr. to lead in rebounding if he has another decent night, if it's a 4 or 5 game series. And just at 25-1, Femi, like we talked about with Caleb Martin, at that price, I just think it's worth it for a guy who's 6'10", who's going to have advantages. And if Miami stays small, he's going to have even more advantages as a 6'10 guy. We saw that in game one. So at 25-1, if you're out there with DraftKings, I think that's worth looking at.
There you go. Shop around as always. Absolutely awesome. Great stuff from my buddy JVT. He'll be on Lombardi Line again, once again, tomorrow to break down more of Game 2. And I'll see you tomorrow for Live Bet Sunday, JVT. Be well until then. That is Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN Senior NBA Analyst and also host of the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast. On the other side, Michael, we start hour number 2 to infinity
Wow.
and beyond.